Somebody will catch the lights. Let's turn to for backdrop. I'm on. Y'all can multitask. Turn to Psalm 139 very briefly. I'm going to read two verses, and then we're going to jump back into Hebrews 4. We were there 4 weeks ago. I think it was 4 weeks ago. I detoured 3 weeks ago and preached on belonging. I've not had a chance to listen to James and Nick's sermons yet. We just got back in town late last night, and so I'm not sure what they preached on the last 2 weeks, but looking forward to that. But today I want to come in and I want to finish up where I was 4 weeks ago as we were, I'll say finish up, we'll just do a continuation. I'm like Bill Johnson, I got one sermon and that's it, and it's going to take the rest of my life to preach that one sermon. And it's just Jesus and Him crucified and Him resurrected and Him alive in us, alive for us. Let me find Psalm 139. I turn to Hebrews 4. I want to read two verses. If you'll remember when we were, if you were with us 4 weeks ago, we were talking about entering into a place of rest and peace, living in a place of rest and peace. You know, Shabbat Shalom. It's rest and peace. It's rest and wholeness. And that's what the promised land is supposed to look like. I find a beautiful backdrop and great foundation for everything that I see, the invitation in Hebrews 4. I found a beautiful foundation for that. I won't even say backdrop, foundation for that in Psalm 139. And I want to just read this again. I want to remind you of this, make this part of your consistent reading. It is written by King David. And I was going to read verses 5 and 6, but I'm going to go ahead and read 1 through 6. He says, "Lord, you know everything there is to know about me." I'm reading out of the Passion Translation. "Lord, you know everything there is to know about me. You perceive every movement of my heart and soul, and you understand my every thought before it even enters my mind. You are so intimately aware of me, Lord. You read my heart like an open book. You know all the words I'm about to speak before I even start a sentence. You know every step I will take before my journey even begins." And here's verse 5 and 6. "I absolutely love. You have gone into my future to prepare the way, and in kindness you follow behind me to spare me from the harm of my past. You have laid your hand on me. This is just too wonderful, deep, and incomprehensible. Your understanding of me brings me wonder and strength." Let me read that again, verse 5 and 6. "You've gone into my future to prepare the way, and in kindness you follow behind me to spare me from the harm of my past. You have laid your hand on me. This is just too wonderful, deep, and incomprehensible. Your understanding of me brings me wonder and strength." I think I just mentioned this 4 weeks ago when we were spending some time in this psalm. When Jesus says, "I go to prepare a place for you," I grew up in Southern Baptist doctrine that meant he was talking about he's going to heaven and he's building us a, you know, in my mind, you know, he said, "In my Father's house are many mansions, and I, you know, I go to prepare you a place." And I, you know, and I'm thinking this big condo complex in heaven, and one of them's got my name on it. And some of you, you know, when we were being real, real faith-filled, we said, "Man, mine ain't a condo. I got a cabin on a point on the lake." You know, that's when we're really stretching out there. And when he says he's going to prepare me a place, and yeah, and you know, it's up there. It's got a Traeger grill on the front of it, Brian. And there's you know, fish in the lake. All right, and that's where I'm gonna spend eternity in heaven. You know, with Jesus, and He's got me a place built and all that stuff. And as I begin to study this scripture, the Lord, this is what the Lord speaks to me. He said, "This place that I'm going to prepare you is your future. This place that I'm going to prepare you is your future." And it's even behind you to protect you from your past. It's an enveloping place. It's a it is a cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night that is all encompassing around you. And we cannot, anywhere we go, he's already been there. Anywhere I go, he's already been there. Anywhere I go, he's already been there. He's already been. He transcends dimensions and time and space, and he's already there. He's already there. And so when he goes to prepare us a place, he's going to prepare us an inheritance. He's going to prepare us an inheritance. He's going to prepare us a future. He's going to prepare us a place of rest. Okay? He's going to prepare us a place of rest. And I don't know about you guys, but I find extreme comfort in that. That causes me not to freak out about tomorrow. That causes me not to freak out about the economy. It causes me not to freak out about the country being woke. It causes me not to freak out about who's sitting in 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue in the office up there. And we freak out about stuff. And if we had this real grasp of who really is King, if we had this real grasp about who really is God, then all of these things that the enemy tries to wreck us with would be a non-issue to us. I mean, let's face it, guys, the rhetoric's the same. And it may be masked a little bit different. But it's just confusion from the enemy to try to rob you of peace, joy, hope, and a place of rest in him. We were, this past 2 weeks, we were off grid for 10 days. I mean, when I say off grid, I mean like off grid. Like zero communication, nothing. And when we got back to Whitehorse, I flipped up Fox News. You know, and I'm not dogging Fox News. I'm not definitely not a CNN guy. You know, if I lean to something, it's Fox. But I flip up Fox News when I get back to Whitehorse, Yukon. And James, you know what? I swear you had took a snapshot of 2 weeks prior and put it right in there, and it looked the exact same. I told Lori, I even commented to Lori, I said, there ain't no difference in what it looked like 2 weeks ago. It's the same headlines, maybe a different picture, a different face, maybe a different person, but all of it was screaming the same thing. And it's fear, and it's panic, and it's worry. And if you went on the other, it would say the same thing too if you were CNN or whatever the others are. And the whole narrative is to remove you from a place of peace and rest in him. And he went to prepare us this place. And so I want us to come in, and that wasn't a knock on, that's a knock on all of it. It's a knock on the whole system. So it was a knock. It was a knock on the whole system. It was a knock on the whole narrative that the enemy controls and is trying to rob us of who we're supposed to be. And so I look in Psalm 139 and I'm like, it causes me to exhale. It causes me to, you know, to woosah or whatever you want to do to make yourself get calm. It causes me to enter into a place of trust in him. And out of that, we bear fruit. Out of that, we are abundant. And so David got this, man. And he had, as a king in that time, there was constantly chaos around him, but he was in a place of oneness with the Lord. He was a man. He made mistakes. Isaac, he wasn't perfect either, but he came into this understanding of who Yahweh was and who he was in his relationship with him. So with that as a foundation, now let's turn over to Hebrews 4. And that's where we didn't get to spend much time the other day. Hebrews 4. Everybody there? Y'all good? All right, we're going to start in verse 1. For a backdrop of this, the writer of Hebrews in chapter 3 and into chapter 4, and he's talking about the faith rest life. He is talking of the children of Israel in the Exodus through Joshua stage, when they were coming out of Egypt and coming into the promised land, the process that it took, the years in the wilderness, the failures, ultimately entering into their promised land. And so he is using this for our backdrop. And in verse 4, he says, now the promise of entering into God's rest is still for us today. The promise of entering into God's rest is still for us today. Key word in that, man. I've got all this highlighted. I've got it starred. I've got it underlined. What is this? This inheritance is a promise. It's a promise from the Lord. It's not something that we have trumped up to try to, you know, sell you people so you'll come in and attend church and bring tithes. It's a promise for you. It is a promise for us as His children, not as Bible-believing American Christians, but as the sons and daughters of God, that we know Him and we are in intimate relationship with Him, and we have our inheritance is a promise. Just like, man, we latched onto it with the blood of Jesus on the cross, and He saved us. And everybody latched hold of that, and we said, John 3:16, man, that's where it's at. And it is. It is a beautiful, beautiful starting point for our deliverance. Never throw shade on that. Amazing, awesome, Jesus conquered death, hell, and the grave. But He did that not just to bring us out of something, but to bring us into something. This promise that He's talking about right here was not the promise of deliverance from Egypt. Let me say that again. This promise that He's talking about right here was not the promise of getting out of something. It was a promise of something that you were supposed to enter into. And it's a promise. I put weight on that. I put weight on that. When I said yes to her 40 years ago, I promised some things. I promised some things. And that carries more weight than, well, let's sign a contract and see how it goes, and we'll do a 5-year lease and all of that stuff. It's a promise. A promise, and God comes in. The Word talks about God's promises and God's gifts and all that are irrevocable. That it's impossible for Him to lie. And He comes in, Nick, and He says, I've got this promised land for you. I will say a promised land. I say, I've got an inheritance for you. That's a promise to you. I've got an inheritance for you. An inheritance for your family. An inheritance for your seed. An inheritance for generations. And He comes in and He says, now the promise of entering into God's rest is still for us today. Quit dispensationalizing everything. That I grew up, well, this was for that time, and this was for that time, and this was for that time, and this for this time. And the writer of Hebrews says that the promise of entering into God's rest is still for us today. Absolutely love that. Man, that ought to get us just encouraged and anchored and solidified. So we must be extremely careful to ensure that we all embrace the fullness of that promise and not fail to experience it. So He said, you got to be extremely careful that we all embrace the fullness, not taste part of it, not a little bit, not, well, I'll get a snatch here and snatch there, and I'll go to this conference and I'll get a little dose and get filled up for a short time, and then I got to have my next fix and the next conference and all. And we treat it like junkies, that I got to have my next fix to my next fix to my next fix. And God says, I want the fullness of that promise to reside in who you are. It's where He calls, and He says that we're trees of righteousness planted by His stream. Trees of righteousness planted in Him. That's why He's talking about in John 15, that I'm in you and you in me. That's why He's talking about in the vine and the branches. And they will be grafted. We will be grafted into Him and cared for by the vine dresser. He said it's still for us today. So we must be extremely careful to ensure that we all embrace the fullness of that promise and not fail to experience it. Are you drinking deeply of Him? Are we on this path, on this journey of entering into the fullness of what He has for us, or are we satisfied just getting out of what we used to be? I see it so many times through the years in ministering for 30-something years now. people will come in and you'll see them when they have financial troubles, and you'll see them when they have marital troubles, or you'll see them when they have troubles with their kids and all that. And yes, God is a great place to come to when you have troubles. But then ultimately, for the most part, you'll see them when those troubles get alleviated, then you don't see them anymore. And they're like, okay, man, that fixed and that worked out and that helped in that area. And maybe my marriage got restored for a while, or maybe my finances got a little bit better, or maybe this looks a little better and all of that stuff. And then we enter into this place to where it's just like, you know, God took care of that. You know, and we call him the Waymaker, and I love that song. That's an awesome song. But it is not a fix it man. It is a lifestyle of who we are in him and who he is in us. And so we look at this, and he's coming in, and he says, I want you to embrace the fullness of that promise. What does that look like for us? We're still going into this thing. When God said, let there be light, it jumped out of his mouth at 186,000 miles per second. The one fact I do remember from science, it has never stopped moving. The universe is continually expanding. And I view my inheritance as that. I view my future as that. I view your inheritance as that. Your future as that. My children's, my grandchildren, and all of this, that it's this thing of entering. I love the fact that when it looked like Abraham's resources were being limited, when Abraham and Lot, the guy that missed the biggest opportunity on the planet was Lot, on failing to enter into the fullness. But when Abraham and Lot, their herdsmen, began to fuss over grazing rights, basically, and Abraham said, you choose what you want and I'll take the rest. And Lot looked towards Sodom. We all know the story. It looked great. The plains of Mamre, I think. And he said, I'll choose this. This looks awesome. And it looks like all of a sudden Abraham got cut out a little bit, got diminished a little bit, restricted a little bit. And immediately God comes in. Lot leaves. God comes in like, you know, in the Bible it reads like the next day. And he says, hey, Abraham. Yeah, God. He says, you look as far as you can see to the east, to the west, to the north, to the south. Everything you can see, I've given it to you. So all of a sudden God comes in, and God doesn't say you're restricted. He says, I give you infinity. You're not restricted. I give you infinity. And the depth that we can go in him is infinity. The love that we can love in him and be loved by him is infinite. And we think things constrain us and restrict us. If I was in a freer society, if I was in a better church, if I was in a bigger church, if I was in a better economic climate, if I was bigger in this or better in this or ingrained in this, then everything would fix me. And it's a geographic move is not always the fix. Sometimes it is the Lord. But Brentwood, Tennessee don't fix everything. Okay? Maybe sometimes your promised land is California. So I got to get out. I got to get out of the politics and all that. Well, let's be change. If I get out of Mayberry, I sit with kids all the time. Y'all know some of y'all know what I'm talking about when I say Mayberry. I sit with kids all the time. They grow up in Harrelson County. They grow up in Bremen. They grow up in Buck Cannon. And I cannot wait to get out of this podunk little town and get out of Mayberry. And then they'll go off somewhere. And then a few years later, you know what they're looking for again? Mayberry. I said, my gosh, if I could just find Mayberry, because that's where I want to raise my kids. That's where I want to live in peace. That's where I want to live in harmony. And we're like that. We fail to not only experience, but we fail to pursue the fullness of everything that God has for us. Quit doggone selling it. Man, we're like the tribes that live on the east side of the Jordan River, and God said, here's my only problem with that. And I think it was the 1.5 tribes that didn't cross the Jordan because they had a lot of cattle, and that side was good for cattle and all that. And I get that, guys, but the only problem with that was that wasn't their promised land. It wasn't their inheritance. It was good. I mean, we've heard it how many million times? Good's the worst enemy of best. And we get good and we're like, man, that's good enough. I'm whatever it was you used to struggle with. I'm not doing this anymore, you know. I don't have these vices anymore. I'm a pretty good family man. I'm doing a lot better, you know. I don't drink, don't cuss, don't smoke. So I'm getting pretty good and all of those things. And we say, okay, I'll just live here. I'll settle here. And God says, man, you can if you want to, but that's not your inheritance. And the one thing that should satisfy us is our inheritance in Him, and nothing else should. Nothing else should quench our thirst. And you know what? You know what changes our perspective of that is the deeper we go in Him. Because things all of a sudden we start seeing things in comparison. And we say, man, I used to think this was good, but now I go into this. And we start seeing things for how they really are, what they can be, and it makes us want to press in and go deeper. If you want to increase your appetite, eat freely. If you want to increase your thirst for Him, drink freely, drink deeply. And I promise you, it will cause you to long for more and to want more and to want to press in for more. And the writer of Hebrews comes in and he said, we must be extremely careful to ensure that we all embrace the fullness of that promise. Embrace the fullness of that promise and not fail to experience it. Then he comes in verse 2 and he says, for we have heard the good news of deliverance just as they did. Yet they didn't join their faith with the word. Now look at this. This is, I'm going to camp out here for just a minute. This is super important to me. This is super heavy to me. And the first however many times I've studied this, it didn't have the weight it does right now to me. But he said, for we have heard the good news of deliverance just as they did. Now, how many of you, your connotation of the word deliverance mean is to bring you out of something? Me, I don't know. Maybe y'all were, you know, heightened in your intelligent understanding, your intelligence. But when I think deliverance, I think deliver me from something. And so this good news of deliverance, that means God says, I'm going to bring you out of Egypt. And that's not what he's talking about at all. That wasn't the message of deliverance that they failed to hear. They embraced that message. You're going to get us out of Egypt? Heck yeah, let's go. You're going to spoil Egypt for us as we leave? Absolutely. You're going to open up the Red Sea and let us cross across and drown Pharaoh and his armies and bring us through that? You're going to bring honey from the rock, you know, as if you would say so. You're going to bring water for us and manna for us every day. We're on board. Get us out of Egypt, because Egypt stinks. We have got this terrible mindset of the gospel is here to bring us out of this world. That it's here to bring us out of my past, out of our culture, out of the wokeness, if you will, of what we're into these days. And I don't mean to get too political on stuff, but I mean, you know, you look around and with our natural eyes, we're saying, boy, this is a mess. Blows my mind. And our idea of deliverance is to bring us out of all of this. Like, beam me up, Scotty, an escapist mindset. Get us out of here. And God says, for such a time as this, Esther, have I planted you on this planet? Have I put you in the middle of this? And this, you look around and this is your inheritance. To be light in the midst of darkness. To be food in the midst of famine. To be water in the midst of drought. And this is who I've called you to be. This is who I've equipped you to be. This is who I have. This is what your inheritance is. And look around. This is your inheritance. And so deliverance is not getting us out of something. Deliverance is getting us into something. We have heard the good news of deliverance. It had nothing to do with Egypt to this point. The good news of deliverance is right here is the promised land. Right here is your inheritance. And I think about the promised land, and I was making some notes on the promised land. And is the land big enough? Is the land good enough? The real question is this your inheritance? They'd been living miraculously for 40 years. They wake up, there's food. Their clothes never wore out. Their shoes never wore out. They have water when they need water. They complain about the food, and God gives them quail. So they had lived a supernatural existence for 40 years, but God said, that is not your inheritance. It shows who I am. I'm faithful. But it's not your inheritance. You need to quit living just in the faithfulness of God and start living in the promises of God. And there's a difference, guys. His faithfulness is intertwined in His promises. But we will live in a wandering state of depending on the faithfulness of God. And God says, that is fine. That shows my character. That shows my nature. But what I want to bring you into is your inheritance, Mark Wilburn. That's what I want to bring you into. Into this place of union, life union with me. And then once you enter into life union with me, then you can enter into life union with each other. And when you start entering into life union with each other, that's when this love just starts bouncing around like these atoms, these hyperspeed atoms that are bouncing off of each other. Do you see how it's wanting to bring us into a place and not just from a place? We need to shift our mindset, guys. Shift our mindset out of just the faithfulness of God, but into the promises of God. And the faithfulness is intertwined. As I said, well, it's intertwined. We're not leaving that. We're just going into more of that, deeper than that, better than that. For we have heard the good news of deliverance just as they did, yet they didn't join their faith with the word. Instead, what they heard didn't affect them deeply, for they doubted. For those of us who believe, faith activates the promise and we experience the realm of confident rest. Let me read that again. For those of us, no, let me back up. They didn't join their faith with the word. Instead, what they heard didn't affect them deeply. Maybe it affects you on the surface, but it didn't affect them deeply. For they doubted. For those of us who believe, faith activates the promise. Faith activates the promise. What they heard didn't affect them deeply. Last Sunday we've been up in the Northwest Territories of Canada on a backpack sheep hunt, and last Sunday we got up and then we did our normal every day. You camp in the river valley, the creek bottom, and you climb a mountain and then you glass for sheep and then you go try to get them. And so last Sunday morning we did our normal. And we climbed up 1,500 feet of vertical or so to start our day. And we start glassing, and we see a band of rams about 2 miles away. And we're like, okay, let's see how we can go get them. And so we walk across the mountainside for about three-fourths of a mile, and then we drop down into a big creek, little river gorge. And we go up that river gorge for about a mile and a quarter, until we get to a spot where we can hopefully approach the sheep. And as we're walking across these mountains, and it's some of it super steep and sketchy and all of that stuff with loose rock and everything, but we're seeing all of these fossils. I mean, like, this is like ridiculously remote. The place we're in is 10,000 square miles and they take 30 people a year. And we're walking across all of these mountains and all of this rock, and we're seeing all of these fossils. I mean, in, you know, rocks, fossils this big in rocks, Mark. And not one or two, like everywhere. And I know how these mountains are made. These tectonic plates collided. And they were about the same weight and about the same thickness, and so they didn't fold under like they did in California. They collided, and then they started going up, and they made these mountains. And it used to be a seabed. That's the thing that's cool to me, is I'm on a 6,000-foot mountain, and I'm seeing sea fossils. And I know exactly when that's made. I knew exactly when that happened. And I see it in the book of Genesis, because God comes in and the earth is void and without form, and it's covered, and the Spirit brooded over the face of the waters, and He separated the sea and the dry ground. And I look at that fossil and I say, I know when that was made, because my Father commanded the land to come forth. And it came forth from the seabed. And that's the result of that. All of a sudden, I've got this intimate place to where I say, I know who did that. And we're walking through this. And I asked Lori, I said, how many people you think have ever walked through here? I told her, God, I said, if this was a national park in America, I said, it would be, they would have trails cut and they'd be doing, it'd be on the doggone lottery system. Get in, there'd be so many people wanting to see it. It looked like Narrows and Zion or something. And I'm sitting here in this place of intimacy, seeing what the Father created, and knowing that very few people have ever walked on this same. Maybe nobody has ever seen that fossil that we laid our eyes on. Maybe not another person ever. And so we experience that. And then coming back, we go the same route, and it's hard. And that was a wall day we had. You know, 10 hours later, we come back that same route, and we were so done, and it was so sketchy, and, you know, Lori's leg was already bloody from here to here from a fall, and we're sitting here, and I'm like, I don't care if I kill a sheep or not. I'm done. Carry me to caribou camp. I'll go shoot a caribou. And so going back, I failed to see the significance of it. I'm just trying to survive. And we get in these hard places in life, and we don't see this intimate promised land, our inheritance, you know. It's like a couple years ago, I was tilling my mama's garden in the middle of July, and I was just soaking wet with sweat, and it was just, you know, typical Georgia middle of July day. And God said, this is your inheritance. And He wasn't talking about the land, because my brother inherited that land. He said, tilling your mama's garden is your inheritance. And He said, stop and look and see where you are. And I saw it going in last Sunday, but I didn't see it coming out. And when we were flying home from Whitehorse to Vancouver, I remember we were flying in, I guess it was Friday afternoon, and we're approaching Vancouver, and we left this remote, pristine wilderness, and I saw the city as we start coming in. And Vancouver, I mean, Scott, you've been up there with us. It's a beautiful city. But as we started flying in, I saw all the buildings, and I saw all the traffic, and I saw the road system, and it looked like Friday afternoon rush hour was happening and all of that stuff. And it looked gross to me. It looked gross. And God said, you know why that looks gross to you? Because of where you've been and what you've just experienced. And guys, God wants us to live in such a place of rarefied air, of beautiful intimacy, of virginity with Him, a place that maybe nobody else has ever been to this place. He wants us to so live in that place in Him that in comparison, all of the trappings of the world look gross to us. Man's best looks gross to us. Man's beauty looks gross to us. Man's work looks gross to us. Because I've been in virgin places with Him. And I can be in those virgin places with Him in Buck Cannon, Georgia. In Bremen, Georgia. In the mountains of Honduras. In a locker room. To where I look out, I don't know how y'all are doing this year. I hadn't seen. I don't know if you're like 4-0 or 0-4 or however many games you played, and it doesn't matter, because when you walk in there, you know what God wants you to see. This is your inheritance. And it's not X's and O's and winning football games. Your inheritance is shaping young men. And He's put you in a place. And if Nick was still here, I'd tell Nick the exact same thing. Lisa, you're a good coach. I'll give you props. You were a good coach and well-deserved all the accolades you've got, the wins you've got, and all of that stuff. But you know what? That's none of that's a big deal to me. You know what's a big deal to me? That for the last 15, 20 years of your coaching, you are a great mentor to a lot of girls. That was your inheritance. Not 500 wins. Didn't you wind up with like 500? Something like that. I don't know. Something. It was a lot. That wasn't your inheritance. Your inheritance were those girls that came through and you mentored them after you came into life union with Christ. Before that, you were a good coach. After that, you were a good life coach. This is what life looks like. This is what peace looks like. Maybe in the midst of chaos, this is what hope looks like. This is what looks bigger, playing bigger than playing a game looks like. That's your inheritance. And God will let you see something, and then he'll come in and he'll whisper. He said, nobody on the planet's ever seen this before. Because maybe you see something in a child. Marty, of all the people in Honduras that we minister to, why Kevin? Since Aaliyah and Brett told me his mom died, I've just felt a real weight for the young man. And I saw some pictures from y'all's thing this last week. Your inheritance is to impact people like Kevin. Your inheritance, Kevin is your inheritance. It doesn't have to be a fossil on a mountainside in the Northwest Territories. It can be the patriarch of being the patriarch of your household, Scott. And we come in, we're like, man, it's a burden sometimes. He's like, yeah, but it's your inheritance. In the morning, we're home for a month. I've got 2 weeks of hard hay field duty. That ain't no fun. That's one of the suckiest things on a farm to do in the summertime. But you know what? It's with joy. It's light. Will I sweat like it? Yeah, but it's still light. He said, my yoke is easy and my burden's light. And when we come in and all that we can see is the best that man can do, all we can see is the interstates of Vancouver, that's when we get disappointed. But we can see it for what it is. And that's the intimate moments. And he said, I want you to enter into my rest. I've gone to prepare you a place. Before you ever stepped in the locker room at Freeman High School, he was there before you, Nick. And he wasn't there before you for Ricky T. He was there before you for you. He was walking through that field house, that smelly, stinky, sweaty field house that, you know, a gym smells like a gym. Our tent smelled like a wrestling complex last week. After 9 days of no bath, Lori's like, this smells like doggone wrestling gym. You know that smell very well, Brett. And we were trapped inside the bubble. And it's like, whew, yeah. Right brings a whole new meaning. Capital R-I-P-E. But he was there before you, and he said, that's your inheritance. And he was in that stinky, musty, skanky tent. And I spend that with my wife, and he says, that's your inheritance. To love her well, to appreciate her well, to honor her well, to do those things. And that, guys, is what he wants us to enter into. Get beyond, well, he delivered me out of what I used to be. When he comes in and he says, I came behind you, Psalm 139, I came behind you to protect you from your past. Part of that protecting you from past is not so that your past would come up and bite you again, but it was to hold your past at bay so you could move on beyond your past. Well said. That's it. Quit looking at yourself like, well, I'm just a, you know, snow-covered dung. Boy, he missed that. I am not snow-covered dung. I was for a nanosecond when his blood hit me, but then he brought me into sonship. And it's an insult to him. It's an insult to the power of the Holy Spirit. It's an insult to redemption for me to view myself that way any longer. And so a lot of what he does by saying, I'll go into my past, it ain't so you'll get back on heroin again. It's not what he's talking about. Hey, maybe it is what he's talking about, but it's a lot deeper and a lot bigger than that. Marty, I'm pretty sure you're not going to get back on heroin again. Not that Marty, but everybody will think, Marty used to be on heroin. He didn't. That I know of. That's not what he's talking about. What he's talking about is I am going to hold your past on the fact that I'm insignificant. I'm small. My inheritance doesn't look like somebody else's inheritance, because what we'll do is we'll do the whole Facebook thing or Instagram thing and we'll compare inheritances. My inheritance don't look like Linda Carter. It's not supposed to. Mine's not as big as Courtney White's. It's not supposed to be. It's supposed to look like you. And if you would get an infinite mindset and realize that my inheritance is continually expanding. And I'm not talking about cars and houses and stuff like that, guys. I'm talking about a lot bigger than that. I'm talking about a lot bigger than that. And he's trying to protect us from a... One thing I used to hate about the West Georgia area is, as I've always said this, I said one thing that I've always hated about the West Georgia area is that a majority of the people are small-minded. And I've determined in my life, me and Lord determined in our lives, that we're going to let our mind be as large as he'll let it be. But I see God bringing people out of that, because I don't look around and see a bunch of small-minded people in here. I don't go through Bremen now and see as many small-minded people as I used to see. And God wants to bring us into this place that what our faith comes in, I'm referring back to the scripture, and I'm closing with this. What did he say about our faith? He said it activates the promise. It activates the promise. What was the big indictment on the children of Israel for failing into the promised land? It said that they came in with unbelief. But how did it describe that unbelief? When they came back, their report, 10 of the spies, here, listen to me, this is important, this is crucial for you. The report of 10 of the spies was the land is exactly like they say it is. It is abundant, it's full, it's big enough, it is rich enough, it is flourishing, it is everything they said it is, but then they come in with that big three-letter word, but. The cities are walled, the inhabitants are giants, and the word says, they saw themselves as grasshoppers, and so we were as grasshoppers in their sight. And they are directly contradicting what the word said about the children of Israel in previous chapters. The word in previous chapters, you know what it said about the children of Israel? All of the nations trembled before them because of their God. Oh no, here come the children of Israel. We're doomed. So much so that some of them even devised schemes on how they could go into league with them, and we're going to fake them off so they'll enter into some type of a league covenant with us so they won't kill us. All the nations trembled before them until they saw themselves as grasshoppers. Stop seeing yourself as small and the world won't see you as small. Stop seeing yourself as insignificant and the world won't see you as insignificant. Your faith and the way you see yourself activates the promise. And until you begin to see you that way, until you begin to see your home that way, your marriage that way, your children that way, then you will live in a small place. You will live in the place of a faithful God. That's better than in a place of an unfaithful God. But you will fail to enter into, according to the word, the fullness of your inheritance. So you start seeing yourself as a highly beloved son. You start seeing yourself is that I have an inheritance, and it is like, boy, I cannot wait to see what my inheritance is going to be, because my parents are continually expanding. We kid the girls all the time, says, well, you know, me and your mom, we're spending all y'all's inheritance. You know what? We're not. Because our lives are continually expanding. Your inheritance is going to blow your mind, and it really doesn't have that much to do with money and possessions. But because we are continually expanding in the Lord, you know what that means? That your inheritance in this natural setting, it's going to blow your mind, and it's going to blow the grandkids' mind. And my father said that I have gone before you to prepare you a place. In Psalm 139, he said, I have gone into your future, and it looks amazing. I've already been there. I have prepared it for you. So you can do this. And not only can you do this, Abraham, it looks like it got contracted, Abraham, but really, you know what? As far as you can see, you know what I'm doing if I'm Abraham? I'm climbing a mountain before I look. Salah. I'm changing my perspective. We get down in the bottom, we can't see much. But as we ascend and we get higher and higher and higher, it expands my vision. And he says, everywhere you can see, I want to see all the way to Honduras, Philippines, Nepal. I want to see as far as I can see in the physical realm and the spiritual realm. Because he says, that's your inheritance. That's your inheritance. He told Joshua, everywhere your feet tread. Well, I could do a little bit of teaching on that too. It's not just where you see, but where you walk. Last Sunday, I saw those 2 miles between us and the sheep. I didn't know what it looked like until I walked it. But when I walked it, then I didn't see a fossil 2 miles away. Not a single one. But until I walked it, I said, look at that. Look at that. Look at that. That's where you see it. So the choice is us. Last word. We'll read this again. We must be extremely careful to ensure that we all embrace the fullness of that promise and not fail to experience it. He didn't say sit back, let God bring it all and dump it in your lap if it's his will, the sovereignty of God. He says, I've already gone into your future to do it. He said, you must be extremely careful to ensure that we all embrace the fullness of it. And the thing that activates it, your faith. Your faith. Your faith. It's easy for you to believe it for me. Can you believe it for you? Easy to believe it for somebody else. Can you believe it for you? I believe Mark and Kate's going to do great things. They're sharp. They've got vision. They have confidence. They have belief. That's awesome, man. I do too. But what about your life? But mine don't look like theirs. Because of you fill in the blank. He said, I'm going to protect you from the past. We're just looking that way. So it's up to us, man. It's up to us. Y'all stand to your feet. I hope today has stirred some faith in you. The Word tells us to. The Apostle Paul says, I'm not going to fail to bring in remembrance. I'm not going to fail to bring into remembrance these things that I have taught you. I'm going to keep reminding you. Cindy Hart, I'm going to keep telling you how wonderful you are to Him. I'm going to keep telling you you're a daughter of Zion. I'm going to keep telling you you're amazing. I'm going to keep telling you you have got an inheritance that is in Him. You've got an inheritance in this earth, and He has already gone there to prepare it for you. And the only thing that's waiting is for your faith to activate it. And I believe there's something to that. Abraham, look and see. But then come into Joshua and say, everywhere your foot treads, that's what's yours. That's what's yours. I think perhaps with the Abraham thing, I've prepared all of this for you. But what you'll walk in is what you'll actually possess. They call it unimproved land. They'll come in and they'll cut the timber off and then they'll just leave it, the land like it is, and it's called unimproved land. It's got potential. But unless we ever do anything with it, it's always going to be potential. I don't want that land to stay barren. I want to redeem it, Anita. I want to redeem it. I want to redeem it. Laura, you got anything? You good, baby? All right. Anybody get, were y'all well fed today? I was refreshed coming into the house, man. When I got here, I was like, ooh-wee, I walked in and they were about to crank up Honey in the Rock. And I was like, yes, I'm back in the house. There's something about corporate that's awesome. Something about corporate that's awesome. Remember the announcements. Youth 2 weeks from now, Errol's and Rhett's house starting their small group. Small groups will be starting up shortly. If you're not plugged into one, see Michelle or Ariel, and they can get you plugged into one. And we are doing a study of Acts by Louis Giglio. Okay, I was thinking Francis Chan the whole time, and I got my mind primed for that. And once again, I'll not keep announcing it every week, but periodically I'll let you know we are going as a group from the church. Marty and Krista, and you know, they're periodically going down a lot to Honduras, but as a bigger group from Victor, we'll be going down February 17th for a week, and it's the kids' winter break, so it's a great time to go. Be an awesome trip, amazing stuff. It's just ministries continuing to expand down there. Keep lifting up Jeff Vaughn and the ministry in the Philippines and everything that's happening there, and just pray for him. And, man, that's about all I got. So anybody else with anything? Are we good? All right. Courtney White, you want to dismiss us, brother?